south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. If you remember a couple of shows ago, I was talking about funerals, cemeteries, and, well, gringos and expats kicking the bucket here in Latin America. That does happen, you know. So today we have When Gringos Kick the Bucket in Latin America, Part 2. Now, if you remember, I mentioned that, as usual, things are a hell of a lot cheaper even when you bite the big one. However, even here in Latin America, funeral companies and funeral homes know that you're very vulnerable when someone dies. And because here in Latin America it's all about the show, it's a perfect time for them to gouge the locals and take advantage of the families of gringos if one happens to be in that predicament. So, naturally, to upsell you, they'll use those time-tested guilt tactics. I mean, really, the guy was tops. You have to give him a first-class send-off, right? After all, you don't want to look cheap in front of all your friends and relatives. And most people fall for it. So, as it turns out, almost every Latin family pays way too much for the funeral and the trimmings that go with it just to impress the friends, relatives, and, well, anyone else who's watching the spectacle. Sound familiar? And then there are the funerals of the rich and powerful. In fact, you longtime listeners might remember me mentioning that in whatever Latin country you're in, there are 20 or 30 powerful families that have been around for hundreds of years. They own the big coffee and sugar plantations, the cement companies, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, you get the idea. And now, more recently, when the big first world franchises came in, they started buying all those up too. McDonald's, Kentucky Fried, Taco Bell, Gold's Gym, etc. And when you're with a bunch of gringos and expats, sometimes the question comes up, who are these families? What are their names? And of course, the names are always different from country to country, but I always tell people, if you want to know who the big guns are, pick up the biggest daily newspaper in that country, flip to the very last pages, the back section, you'll see page upon page of condolences when one of the big wigs dies. Yep, there'll be all kinds of people and businesses putting in those ads and kissing his backside, even if he was the rottenest person on earth. And of course, big ads in any newspaper are expensive. So when you see quarter, half page, and full page condolence ads, just have a look at the last name of the person who died, and you'll know who the big guns are. Now, some gringos think, just like in the U.S., all you have to do is pick up the Sunday newspaper, look in the society pages, and look at the photos there and who's running this or that charity event, etc., and you'll know who the big guns are, but that's not true here in Latin America, not anymore. That'd be mostly the new money and the trophy wives just showing off. Whereas the old money, the ones with the real power, the ones that have control over elections and presidents, etc., just like in the States, they're not big on publicity. However, when one of them dies, that's when all the kiss-assers come out. They compete by jockeying to see who can take out the biggest condolence ad. In other words, who spent the most dough buttering the dead guy up with a flowery eulogy? Even if he was a world-class asswipe, in those circles, people are keeping score. Because remember, these big oligarchic families can hand out or hold back a hell of a lot of favors. That's the way of the world, right? Now, another way that many gringos and expats find out that Latin America is a very classist and socially delineated society is when, and you'll probably only realize this when you're down here a couple of years, and you get to meet and know a lot of Latin people, is that their eyes absolutely light up when certain names are mentioned. My favorite example, the name Castillo. That means castle in English. You see, in more than one Latin American country, that name is huge. Why? Because they own plantations and beer companies, the Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola franchises. They've got pieces of radio and TV stations. Now, that name Castillo, as well as a dozen or so other names, is so well known it's spoken with awe amongst the sweaty masses. I'm not kidding. In fact, occasionally a little social gossip will slip in and you'll hear one of them say something like, Silvia, you won't believe it. No te creas. Guess who came into my department in Sears and bought a coffee maker? So-and-so Castillo. Man, over the years, I've heard plenty of gossip like that. And you know, that Castillo family is so big, a lot of the cousins are ne'er-do-well dumbasses that perpetually live off their parents and their family wealth, and there ain't enough of it to go around, I'm telling you. But because the public and the sweaty masses are so enamored and impressed with that last name, Wherever they show up, with or without their bodyguards, they get the best seats and preferential treatment. Even though, chances are, the Castillo that's in the house is a do-nothing moron. Kind of like the stories my old engineering buddy from Chicago, his name was Greg Hyatt. Just like the Hyatt Hotels, but not related at all. And you know, Hyatt's not a very common name, so everywhere he'd go, he'd get comped, VIP service, free this and free that, especially when he went to Vegas. And yet he was not at all related to the Hyatt Hotel people. And when people asked him, he'd just smile and act like he said, Hyattish. So just know that here in Latin America, there are 10, 20, or 30 big names, well known as the country's power brokers. Now note, I'm not talking about the big names in politics. Presidents, vice presidents, senators, and congressmen, they come and go. By the way, down here, they're not called senators or congressmen. They're called diputados. English translation, deputy. That's diputados. As Shakespeare once said, a scumbag dickhead by any other name would smell as putrid, or something like that. So the big political names, though the locals bow down to them too, just like most common people up in the States will bow down to their political pustules. Yeah, and even though in private conversations we all call them worthless scumbags, if one were to come face to face with such a creature in the toothpaste aisle, chances are the average American would shake his hand or ask for his autograph. Same here in Latin America, I've seen it for myself. By the way, I mentioned that last name Castillo because I once played in an Americanized rock and roll band here, and our drummer was one of those Castillo boys. Nice guy all around to people within his class, or people he perceived within his class like gringos, but born with a silver spoon in his mouth and with an entitled attitude that, well, kind of made me cringe sometimes. Imagine going to gigs or band practice, and your drummer arrives in a big black bulletproof Suburban with two bodyguards. Though I have to admit, they were the best roadies we ever had. And we didn't have to pay him either. Imagine that. We didn't pay him and they hated our music too. Yet they still hauled our junk. They had to. Look, what do you expect? Bodyguards come from the lower classes, so they're into cantina and mariachi music, not gringo beach party blues and rock and roll. Anyway, for a couple of years, I got to see exactly how the entitled upper classes with mega wealth live. Oh, and you longtime listeners know this story, but if you just happen to have tuned in lately, I told a story about this drummer guy who was engaged to get married to a beautiful Colombian girl who'd gone to university in the U.S. That happens with the wealthy people. They always try to send their kids to the States. She really was smart, beautiful, and came from a really big and powerful Colombian family, too. She really didn't much like the class system at all. But hey, you know, she was born at the top of it, so you can't fight City Hall. Anyway, she was engaged to the drummer in my band. But that didn't last long, and one day she came crying to me and said, Johnny, I'm breaking it up. He's a nice guy and everything when he's around me, but you know, when you marry someone in Latin America, you marry their family too, and I just cannot stomach the people in his family. And I said, good for you, and that was the end of that. But I digress as usual. Man, did I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, discussing what happens when gringos and expats die in Latin America. As mentioned in a recent previous show, part one, you really should have some plans or at least a kind of a checklist available because when someone dies, things are done a bit differently down here in Latin America. And if you don't speak Spanish and all you do is hang around with and talk to gringos, you'll be at an even bigger disadvantage. Although admittedly, things are so inexpensive down here, especially off the tourist trail, even if you get clipped at the funeral home, you probably won't feel it much. But still, you want to get through it in the smoothest way possible. Turns out, just lately, all through Latin America, banks are offering funeral insurance policies. Of course, that kind of stuff's been around 50 years or so up in the States, but down here, it's just starting. Now, for Latin banks, it's all about them expanding their services and getting people to sign up for debit and credit cards and checking accounts. It's all about getting new clients because, you see, in some Latin countries, less than half of the adult population even have a bank account. So then is it worth it or not? Is it a good deal or not? I say it's a very good deal and gringos should sign on. So why is that and how do you go about doing it? Well, for one thing, when you walk into a bank, they'll usually have a row of little pamphlets on the countertop explaining all their extra services, car and health insurance, credit card plans, CDs. Yep, they got CDs down here, even in dollars. By the way, I just checked out the rates and depending how much you put in and for how long, you can get between 2.5% and 5% a year. Anyway, I just happened to be in a bank the other day, and I picked up a pamphlet that says we are now offering funeral plus insurance. And I'm thinking, plus what? Seguro funerario plus. And that's just the funeral insurance they have at this bank. Many banks have it. And I'll tell you why it's a good idea for gringos and expats. The downside is the pamphlet's all in Spanish. The bank tellers and customer service people will be speaking in Spanish too. So you'll need a little help to sign up, but you can have your lawyer or your lawyer's office help you do that. Or if you're in and around Guatemala or Central America, you could have our famous expat concierge service help you with that. Or if by some miracle you happen to speak Spanish, you can do it yourself. Speaking of Spanish, you can still get the free second edition of Jack Brett's Fast Spanish book. He's offering it for free only to my Expat Files listeners. Just go to theexpatfiles.com/fastspanish. All right, listen to this. I'm going to translate this pamphlet a little bit, and you'll see why it's such a good idea. First of all, if you have this insurance and you or someone in your family dies, all you do is make a phone call, and they'll do everything for you. Of course, if you die, you won't be able to make that call unless you're Houdini. You get the idea. Number one, they'll do all the legal and government paperwork necessary. Number two, they'll move the body from wherever it is to the funeral parlor of your choice or to your home. Because you know, here in Latin America, you heard me explain this on a previous show, many, many people still have the viewing of the body in the home. Number three, it says whether you have the viewing in a funeral parlor or the home, they'll decorate with appropriate flowers and arrangements. They'll organize the religious service of your choice. Then they'll provide the funeral procession and the hearse to take the body to whatever cemetery you've selected. Now, get this, and here's the big surprise, and it doesn't apply to you, but is why so many Latins are buying this policy. Remember, you can get a family plan, and guess what? It says, if you or a covered family member happen to be in the U.S. or Canada when you croak, they will do all the legal consultations, paperwork, etc., and have the body shipped back to your Latin country. Now, the family plan covers husband and wife and up to 6 kids. Now, this is unusual. You're allowed to buy into the plan up to 74 years of age, and the premiums don't go up. They're the same no matter what age you are. Which makes this thing truly amazing. If you've got some kind of chronic disease and you know you're not going to make it too long, you can buy in right before you're going to go. Now, this might be the best part. You might be wondering about the cemetery plot and the casket and all that. Well, this policy has a life insurance benefit too, so if someone dies, you automatically get $3,000, which down here in Latin America would easily buy you a nice cemetery plot and a nice casket. Now, in the States, the average cost of a single plot is around $1,500, and the average no-frills casket around $2,500. So already you're looking at $4,000, even if everything else is paid for. But the key is, you see, if you get the insurance, they'll do everything for you. You'll just have to pick the plot and the casket. That's it. Or you can elect for cremation, which will eat up probably $2,000 of that death benefit. As mentioned in a past show, they don't do many cremations here in Latin America because of religious reasons, of course. Then again, you don't need a casket unless you're going to show the body. Then you'll rent one for a few hours. And with cremation, there's no plot because you'll have an urn. All right, so this funeral insurance, what does it cost? If you're just buying an individual plan, a single, it's $3 a month, regardless of age. And for every person in your family that you add to the plan, up to 6 kids, it's $1 extra a month. So looking at the plan here, for husband and wife and 6 kids, it runs around $9 a month. Now in the States, for just a single, it varies with age, averaging 30 if you're real young to $100 a month if you're older. So just know that it's available. It's dirt cheap. It's something you don't have to think about. It's a no-brainer. Then if you croak, whether expectedly or unexpectedly, no worries. Now, of course, for you, if you're the one that croaks, no worries at all. But it's your survivors that'll have to deal with the carcass, you know? By the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this very strange, some would say kind of revolting development that's happened just recently. You know, with millions and millions of illegal Latinos sending back monthly remesas from up in the States, you won't believe what's been happening here in Latin America at some of these lower-end banks who are on the receiving end of all those millions in remesas. Lower-end banks, what does Johnny mean by that? Well, I mean that in every Latin country, there's maybe 3 or 4 really solid 50 to 100, even 150-year-old banks that are very solid, owned by some of the biggest agricultural and mining families. You heard me speak about this in past shows. Anyway, so there's three or four very, very solid banks. Those are the ones you should be banking with, and your lawyer will know that, which is another reason why you have to have a Latin lawyer. But the thing is, every Latin country has 10 or 20 other banks too, so what about those? The thing is, if you don't have a lot of money in the bank, you can just have a standard account with a few hundred bucks in it. It doesn't really matter what bank you're with, though there are banks specifically set up for Latin workers. Like, for example, there is one called Banco Agronomo and Banco Agromercantil. Then there's Bancafé, a lot of banks with the word café or laboral, which is work or labor, somewhere in the name. Then there are a lot of banks with the word trabajador or worker in them. Those are the smaller, lesser known, and often little bit scruffier banks that cater to the population out in the boonies, the farmers, the hayseeds, the sugarcane cutters, the coffee pickers, and the minimum wage factory and maquila workers. Now remember, these aren't the banks that the big coffee, pineapple, sugar, and mining corporations bank in. These are banks for the common worker. They're used to handling many, many very tiny accounts because the average Latin grunt worker only has $100 or so in his savings account. Read that in a local paper lately. I guess it's not much different than up in the States, huh? The surprising thing is that just recently, some of these small banks that cater to regular laborers and factory workers, these are also the banks that receive most remesas from illegals up in the States. Stands to reason because most of these banks have clients who are lower middle class or poor. The ones who are most likely to have a family member or friend up in the States or Canada illegally. Anyway, I'm holding in my hand right now one of those little bank pamphlets that offers special services. It's a kind of rough-looking, black and white, not well-designed pamphlet. Like the bank, it's a little rough around the edges. The bank's called Banco Agromercantil. It says in big letters, Seguro de Vida Inmigrante. Well, get a load of this. It's life insurance you can take out on your legal and illegal relatives and friends up in the States. In other words, you can buy insurance on the people up in the States who are sending you those remesas. So what do you get when you purchase the policy? You, the monthly receiver of the dough in your Latin country, receive a $5,000 life insurance settlement. And it says in case of accidental death of the migrant up in the States, the policy will cover assistance and the paperwork and repatriate the body back to the home Latin country. And once the body's returned home, they'll pay for the complete funeral service. So here's the deal. If you're in a Latin country and you're receiving remesas from someone up in the States, 90% of the time it's from an illegal family member, right? Could be legal though, but most likely not, and the banks know this. If the person or family member who's been sending you the monthly money dies, that means you're out the money, right? Then what? Well, you're back to being dirt poor again, unless you get this insurance. Then you get $5,000, plus the person up in the States sending you that money gets a free trip back home and a funeral. And what's the cost of that plan? Well, $5 a month to be deducted from the bank account where those remesas are flowing. So you got to know that bank, marketing, and sales departments here in Latin America are not stupid. They know with all the millions of people sending back remesas and the billions of bucks coming in every month, people on the receiving end of those remesas have a bank account. They have to because generally it's a wire transfer coming in dollars. And they know the biggest fear of a person who's addicted to, or I should say accustomed to, getting those remesas monthly is that he'll lose his job or get deported. And that would be the end of the cash flow and a personal disaster for the person on the receiving end. And the second biggest worry is that the person will die. And then what? No remesas. And if he's illegal and dies, not only is it a massive paperwork storm for the state officials that have to deal with it, the Latin family back home almost always tries their best to get the body back. And that's another paperwork mess and costs a lot of dough. So then what happens when an illegal person dies up in the States? Well, I asked around. In fact, I asked my cleaning lady and maintenance guy. They've all got a few friends and family members who are up there illegally living the so-called American dream. So here's what I found out. Normally, when someone's illegal and dies up in the States, they're connected with a local Latin church, so the church takes up a collection to have the body processed and sent back to the home country. But they never collect much, they always come up short. They also connect with the family in Latin America, asking them to send as much money as they can too to cover expenses. All in all, the whole process costs around $4,000 to $5,000, and someone's got to come up with that money. The governments of the U.S. and Canada will not ship those bodies back out of the goodness of their hearts. And you know, Latin families back home almost never have that kind of money, so they'll go to the local loan sharks, who'll be glad to give it to them at 20% interest a month, which, as you might imagine, puts a huge burden on the family. Even worse, there's no more remisas coming in. Wait a minute, what about those remisas? For years, a person might be sending them back. There should be some money somewhere, right? Wrong. Latins are not savers. As far as remisas, they usually always spend it all, building or buying a newer, better house or improving the one they've got. And thus, the banks down here came up with that brilliant idea to have immigrant insurance. And man, for $5 a month, the plan is taking off like gangbusters. Yep, you heard right. $5 a month. Hey, I know this has nothing to do with living, working, playing, and or retiring for gringos and expats here in Latin America, but it's just another little piece of the social puzzle here in Latin America, and the more information, the better, right? By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll be seeing a screenshot of the funeral insurance pamphlet I'm talking about. Of course, it's in Spanish, but you'll get the idea. And you'll be seeing a screenshot of that black and white scruffy pamphlet that describes the immigrant insurance policy. Just want to give you a little backup proof here, in case maybe you're thinking all this is hearsay. Because, you know, when I have mentioned this stuff to a few gringos and expats, they said, "Come on, John, are you sure? Who told you that? That can't be right." Then I direct them to one of those pamphlets. Man, I win a lot of bets that way. All right, enough said about that. Now, this is important. You know, you've got a little less than 2 weeks to sign up for my Expat Insider Seminar and still take advantage of the early bird discounts. To sign up, just go to the newexpat.com website and hit the seminar link. Remember, on December 1st, the price goes back to normal. That's $500 more. And do remember, if you're planning on killing two birds with one stone, that is, coming down to the seminar and applying for your temporary or permanent residence in Guatemala at the same time, you'll need about a month on the outside, though it might take a lot less time than that. Still, you should plan for a month for dealing with government offices and a couple of rounds of snail mail to collect the documents that you'll need from your state. Remember, you'll have to have them notarized and apostilled at your state's State Department. I know that sounds weird, but your state does have a State Department. And remember, as soon as you sign up for the seminar, I'll be sending you the step-by-step information on how to do that. So the trick is to try to sign up for this seminar by December 1st. Oh, you can sign up after that, of course. In fact, in past seminars, I've had people sign up just hours before we got underway. But when you hesitate and sign up at the very last minute, you're really at a disadvantage if you want to get your temporary or permanent residency started right away. By the way, you know there's all kind of conflicting information on blogs and internet sites about residencies and stuff here in Latin America. In fact, I want to point out a glaring bit of residency misinformation coming from a site I normally really like, Doug Casey's International Man. So even they get it wrong sometimes. Listen to this. I just got a report from them entitled, "Panama, the easiest country to obtain residency." You get that? The easiest country. Wrong. Then, later in the article, it says one of the easiest countries. Anyway, it says Panama has a program referred to as Specific Countries or Friendly Countries Program. I mentioned this before. Did a show on it maybe 2 years ago now. Remember? Of course, the U.S. is one of those countries. Then it says it requires one simple application and a deposit of $5,000 in a local bank. But then, get this, it says applicants will also have to show proof of some meaningful economic activity or employment in Panama, such as ownership of a Panama corporation that actually does business, or a purchase of income-producing real estate, or an employment contract from a business in Panama. Then it says, of course, it's at the discretion of the Panamanian authorities to determine if your situation or business qualifies as meaningful economic activity. Then it says you'll be able to get your passport and nationality after 5 years as a permanent resident. However, then it says the Panama government has discretion on the naturalization process. If you don't spend significant time in the country during those 5 years, they may decide not to grant you your passport and citizenship. So basically, they're strictly counting the number of days you are in Panama. And if you just come in and out a couple of days or weeks a year, they're not going to like that. So technically, if you have residency in Panama, they say you can be out up to 2 years and then come back in and maintain the residency. It also says they're counting the days you're in the country so that when you go for your passport, if they feel you haven't been in the country long enough, they'll deny your application. And this, according to International Man, is the easiest country in the world to get residency. Yeah, but then what about passport? That's what you get residency for, right? So you can get your passport in 5 years. Anyway, here's something else they don't tell you. As a tourist, you can stay in Panama for 6 months. That's without having your permanent residency, right? Coming in as a tourist. After that, you need to leave the country for 30 days before you can re-enter. Now, if you plan on driving in Panama, as a tourist, you can stay 6 months, but they only let you drive for 90 days. Then you have to leave the country for 30 days before you can return and drive. Yep, it's nuts, but that's the new rule. Not only that, it used to be when you apply for residency, you only needed a sheriff's or police good conduct report from your city or county. But now you need an FBI report, which is nationwide. So, for example, if you have a DUI or a small infraction in a state outside of your own, it'll show up on that FBI report. So lately, Panama's tightening up on residency. And you know, a lot of those things I just mentioned, for me, are deal breakers. But that's not all. If you get temporary or permanent residency and you don't plan on staying much in Panama, you can get a multi-entry visa stamp on your passport for $50. And if you forget or you don't know about it and you leave and come back in, it's a $2,000 fine. They'll note that on your U.S. passport. And how's that going to look when you go for your Panama passport? Then there's Guatemala, which is one of the reasons we do the seminar there. Still, all you need is a police or sheriff's report. And after 5 years of permanent residency, you apply directly for passport and nationality. And you only have to return to the country 1 day a year to maintain your residency. And unlike Panama, when you finally do go for your passport, they won't hold it against you or arbitrarily disqualify you because they say you haven't spent enough time in the country. Oh, and by the way, in Guatemala, you don't have to open a corporation, buy land, have a business, or have an employment contract. Not for temporary residency. All you need is a sheriff's report, no FBI report, and a Latin lawyer to get the ball rolling and vouch for you. And after 2 years, you automatically go to permanent residency. You don't have to prove any income or make any kind of investment or business at all. And to go to permanent residency directly, Guatemala has it all over Panama. But you knew that already, right? So as for disinformation, it's all over the net, even from so-called trusted sources, which is why you absolutely have to get boots on the ground in one way or another. Oh, and before we finish up today, don't forget, if you're thinking about or working on your Plan B and can't make it down to the seminar, the very next best thing is to take my Expat Essentials course. Just go to expatplanb.com. Oh, and for all you guys and gals out there who are juggling your schedules, trying to work it out so that you can come down to my January seminar, if you're looking to save an extra $500 on top of the early bird discounts, I can usually hook you up with a roommate so you can share double occupancy. Same sex, of course, because, you know, here in Latin America, we don't break things down into 65 different genders. That's one of the reasons to have a Plan B, to get far, far away from that kind of crazy.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.